Hello and welcome back to Cause Internal Monologue. In this episode, we're going to be discussing the question, issue 3, Suffer the Children. So, this issue is the more generically superheroic version of this arc, so to speak. Where issue 1, you have the establishment of what Vic is like, taking his 60s version, putting it to the extreme, and then killing him, literally. Issue 2 is the rebirth of the character. Issue 3 is now, here's the new status quo for the character, while also dabbling in some action and furthering some threads and a heavy dose of very topical politics, as is known in this series. The series is heavily political in that aspect. While it does dip its toes into more traditional superhero fare, it doesn't lose its bite. And while I have said that these first four issues are more generally standard superhero fare than the rest of the series, something Denny himself even admitted, in issue 5 there will be a noticeable shift to something entirely different and much more interesting. That doesn't downplay the importance of these four issues. These four issues establish everything going forward. They're necessary groundwork. It's just the tone that's a little different. But even within that, we have Denny trying to take the series and go, okay, here's a traditional superhero look. Let's look a little deeper. We ended last issue with Vic confronting Reverend Hatch in the question, costume, saying, I want you to pray. And then we open issue 3 with going, this is a generic line he said because he doesn't know what he wants. It's literally the deconstruction and just demolishing of your standard macho superhero, comes and saves the day, has the one-liner type of thing, where, yeah, that seems like a cool one-liner in that moment. Then you flip to the next issue, and you have, well, Vic didn't really know what he wanted to say here, because he came here out of an impulse. He just really wants to know everything that's going on, and he didn't know how to approach this correctly, so he said that because it's more of a statement to himself, a pray for answers, a pray for better questions. He doesn't really know. And that is such a wonderful takedown of the standard superhero fare. Denny loves superheroes. He worked on superheroes for pretty much his whole life, but he still can talk about the silliness of some aspects of the genre and the tropes and stuff. Every writer can see the tropes within their own work and make fun of them. And here we have, Vic acting like your traditional superhero, or even better, an 80s action hero macho guy, right? Because they always had the one-liners. I ain't got time to bleed, and I'll be back, and all these things. All these classic one-liners, right? The comparison of Vic to macho 80s action heroes is a very, very specific thing that will reoccur throughout this series. This is a very specific point Denny is wanting to drive home. That Vic fell into this aspect through the negative parts of his nature. That to be that is not necessarily the height of anything good. That's not self-reflection. That's not being a good person. That's what the height of toxic masculinity brings you to. And a lot of this series is about tackling toxic masculinity and toxic gender tropes in general, and how that will affect you personally, politically, and emotionally. Like, let's take Myra, for example. Myra was a newswoman, right? She was forced into a marriage with Wesley Furman due to threat of her kid, who's a special needs kid who lives in an orphanage, right? In this issue, she has this moment where she's trying to hide Vic. And so she uses her femininity to outwit the guards by saying, you want to take a look, and comes out in her nightdress as an intentional affront to them, as calling them out on their lecherousness, even though that wasn't the intent. Because right now, Myra's got nothing. She used to be someone. She used to be a reporter. She's lost that. Now she is the wife of the mayor. She's not even her own person anymore. She has been dehumanized. And she is basically being told to keep her pretty head down and don't think too much. And the only way she can rebel is by using that to her advantage. And this is a big part of Myra's arc. Much like Vic is tackling toxic masculinity, Myra's is tackling the way in which women are treated, especially in patriarchal societies, especially at this moment in time in the 80s, and what is expected of them. Both our main characters, our two main heroes of the book, are tackling gender norms in different ways. It's a brilliant thing. And it's something that will become more and more evident as time goes on. And I just love that Denny and Dennis are doing this in such a particular way. It's a slow build of them slowly realizing what they're doing, these characters. But for Denny and Dennis, this is a very clear trajectory. And it's just, it's beautiful to see because I know things that are coming up. And I know these arcs that these characters are going to go in. And I can see the beginnings of them. Of them realizing their flaws and perhaps maybe choosing to embrace them, maybe perhaps choosing to ignore them or maybe fight against them. Who knows? They have a lot of growing to do, both of them. And the whole Jackie thing is interesting. She's special needs kid, lives in an orphanage, the same orphanage that Vic grew up in. And we find out a little bit more about Vic's, you know, early childhood, that he was abandoned at the doorsteps of a church, you know, at 6 months old, with tons of bruises on him. He was bullied by both, you know, the nuns and the orphans alike there. He was not exactly in a happy place, and basically that resulted in him becoming an incredibly anger-filled, lonely man. And again, that's feeding the whole toxic masculinity thing. A lot of times in the idea of toxic masculinity, the ultimate idea of toxic masculinity is you're the strong lone wolf guy who can protect your family or your loved ones, or specifically, the woman who is a damsel in distress who can't take care of herself. And this is the world in which Vic found himself in as a result of his environment. Nature versus nurture. And it's, again, very interesting how all of this piles onto a interesting, you know, gender conversation happening in this ultimately superhero book. Not only a superhero book, but a superhero book made in a particular time in which comics were starting to get, you know, fall into more of that trap of the macho-ness, especially in the late 80s, and which would eventually lead to what we saw in the 90s. It's interesting that Denny is actively countering that in a book that could, in a lesser writer's hands, have ended up exactly a product of its time instead of a conversation and a counter to the products of its time. It's such a fascinating dichotomy this book brings out. One thing that I think is interesting, that Wesley Furman is, not only is he, like, glorifying Teddy Roosevelt, who, you know, is an interesting person in his own right historically, and is famous for his big stick policy, which, you know, is a very, you know, outmoded line of thinking, but yet one often, you know, preached by those who don't understand it. He's an alcoholic. Denny O'Neill was an alcoholic. He's gone now, but he was always, you know, he found out he was an alcoholic, I believe, in the 70s, and he ended up losing his job at one point, because everybody at the Marvel offices, he said, once knew him as the drunk, and he almost died as a result of it, and it took him a while to repair his life, become the man that he became, and figure things out. And within that, you have him writing post that, after his recovery, after he's gone sober, writing a parody of an alcoholic. And what it is, I think, a lot of the question is very personal to Denny. He talked about this when he was still around. So I think it's him lampooning himself of how easy it was to fall into that trap. How easy it is to fall into something that you, where you can't even recognize yourself in a mirror. And instead, you look to others to compare yourself to. Because you know what you're doing is wrong, but you can't help yourself. And that's the tragedy of having an addictive personality or alcoholism, anything like that. All of this issue, well, it, on the surface, could be a traditional superhero story and does look at the wider picture of how did these people get to this point. Like, let's look at the main villains of this issue. The Musto crime family. Poor Junior. He's an abused kid who's gay in the 1980s and has a shithole of a father. An abusive piece of shit gangster father, right? But that's part of the problem, is that Junior does care about his father in this weird, twisted way, because people, victims of abuse, often can't recognize that they're victims of abuse, because their feelings and their emotions get wrapped up into it. And you combine that with his fear of the fact that he is gay in a time in which that wasn't exactly accepted, and during a time when men were expected to act a particular way, and his you know, his father is wanting him to be a man, to grow up, you know, and sending him on this mission to be a man, it's really indicative of how all these cultural influences, the nurture side of nature versus nurture, has influenced the way these people became. We look at Hatch, even in previous issues, you know, he became that way because he was disillusioned in Vietnam. Now he's completely lost it because the person he thought was dead came back as like an angel to him, causing him to question his own faith that he's already been questioning and crack under the pressure. Everybody's under societal pressures in this issue and in previous issues to be a certain way. And the question is, ironically, can you fight against those pressures to be something different? Can you stand up to that? Can you be different? Can you question yourself to be better? And that's the tragedy of Junior, as well as Vic, as well as Myra, as well as everyone. And then you have on the fact that all of this is tied into the fact that it's Martin Luther King Day, and there's a school bus full of white children that is going to be bombed, and all the evidence is going to be planted to attack the black leader of Hub City to discredit him as a racist. And all of this is a horrible political allegory for things that we have seen happen right now in our current day. And this was being written by a man who lived through the civil rights movement, who lived through Martin Luther King getting shot. And all of this, you know, is about the society, how society decays itself and forces you into a way to act and a way of being and not to question yourself. Hence the title, The Question. What are you questioning? You're questioning yourself. You're questioning society. You're questioning what is the purpose of all of this. Again, Denny took what was a very specific concept by Steve Ditko and what that represented in that philosophical belief of objectivism, the question of morality, the question of selfishness, and then turned it around on its head to question itself. This is the power of this book, and this isn't even the strongest bits of this book. These first four issues are important, but even Denny himself considered them the lesser of what came later. This is a one-of-a-kind comic book that only comes around when you have the best creative team at the best moment in time to talk about these things with a character no one wanted. And you have magic. Even at the end, like when Vic is berating himself because he lost himself to the anger, because he has the thing about kids, because guess what? A orphaned kid has a thing about protecting kids, big surprise. And he found out the woman he loves doesn't have her kid living with her, instead living in the orphanage he grew up in. He's having to tackle that and realize, oh, I'm kind of judging her for this, and I don't know if that's the right thing to do. He gave into his anger, you know. In issue 2, he learned to be a better person, but that doesn't mean he can stick to it. People can regress, and part of Vic's internal conflict is whether he can embrace that change and or regress. And he's becoming, as he'll say later, becoming is part of the Zen philosophy, that you're always on the journey to becoming a better person. But whether you succeed or not is up in the air. But the idea is to strive to get there, to try and be better, to try and do good. And we see that he berates himself. He's like, I should have just taken the fuse out. There was no need for what I did. It was grandstanding. The whole calling card thing. All of that, he berates himself. He even damages his car, which again is like the whole, like, he has the souped up VW Beetle thing from issue 1, embracing more traditional superior stereotypes. In Vic's weakness as a person, he damages that car, leading to the fact that, guess what, he doesn't have the super ultra, you know, VW Beetle souped up with a special engine, right? That's the joke. We even see, like, embracing, well, simultaneously inverting the superhero gadget thing. Denny also does a thing where he'll do throughout the series, which is to take the binary gas and bonding agent of the mask and evolve it a little. Change it so it doesn't require as many steps, and it hopefully sticks on better. This will happen a couple more times throughout the series, and even will happen after Denny leaves the book. For instance, during the Greg Rucka days, when Renee takes on the mantle, Renee Montoya, the binary agent has again been changed to something that Rotor has been working on. This was his magnum opus. This is something he was trying to make work, and as a scientist, he can't stop working on it. And it's a nice way to evolve the quote-unquote powers of the character. Vic is a gadgetless, powerless superhero. You have to have a way to evolve it, evolve the superhero-ness of the character, otherwise more traditional superhero audiences will get bored, and this is a way to do it within the confines of the character and the story being told, and it makes sense. One thing I like about the optimism of the ending, after the rather bleak stuff that happened this issue, on a character level, it's Vic realizing he has to live in the here and now. There will be violence, either there was violence in the past, there will most certainly be violence in the future. Right now, he's building a snowman. This is his chance to connect to Jackie, connect to the kids in the orphanage, try and make peace with his past while also having fun in the present and not worrying about the future, while also understanding that things will happen. Things will not always be perfect, but for right now, he can focus on the positive. Now there's the meta text behind it. I don't know if the timelines line up exactly. There was never a statement of when it happened in the series, but I like to think of it just for my own benefit of wanting the best in life for Denny and his wife, who are both sadly departed. Was Denny, when he was younger, kid in St. Louis, Irish Catholic born, he was involved with a woman named Mary Fran. They were engaged at one point. They called it off. Eventually, Denny moved to New York when he got the offer to be a comic book writer after submitting that the paper. He talks about it in several podcasts and whatnot. During this time, and of course that was back in the 60s, during this time in the 80s, he gets a letter from his old flame, Mary Fran, asking how he's doing, wanting to catch up with him. And as a thank you for that, they arranged to, of course, meet up, but he also sends her some complimentary issues of the comic he's working on at the time, The Question, to show what he's doing and what he's been doing for the past 20 years. They would eventually get married, finally, and have a kid. And sadly, she would die first, and then he would die shortly thereafter. But they were together forever, until their passing, in the late 2010s, 2020s. I know that the timelines probably don't match up, but I like to think that he receives that letter when he is writing this ending. Because the optimism of the ending is something that rarely exists in this book. There's only a handful of other times I can think of a quote-unquote optimistic ending, and even then that comes with a price. But here, right now, Vic is building a snowman. And right now, Denny O'Neill is receiving the letter of the woman he loved. That's how I like to think of it. Anyway, I shall see you next time for the end of this arc and the evolution of the book heads straight into something different. See you then. Bye.